All right. Remember, we had a shift in our schedule. We switched Janice to Chris's place, and now Chris is back in the room, resolved his conflict. He's our ombudsman, and he's going to talk about his role within this whole sphere and how he functions, what he does, and what he doesn't do as well. Please, you introduce yourself, Chris, and then I will change your slides. Yes.
Is that as a PDF or is that as a...
It's a PDF. So you can flip with this.
Yeah. That button there. Right. I'm sorry about the time and everything. Welcome, everybody. This session is about the ICANN Ombudsman. And
you will be closer to the...
No, I prefer standing.
Okay.
Yes. And I start off by saying, welcome. Haere mai ki te kaitiaki mana tangata. And I'm sharing with you the Maori language from where I come, which is New Zealand. And part of the diversity of ICANN is that they've reached out and employed someone from 12,000 kilometres away. And you may have guessed my English doesn't sound quite like some of the others. That welcome in the Maori language means welcome from the office of the guardian of the people. And that is... That is a better microphone. That enables me to start off by explaining to you the question you've no doubt got. What is an ombudsman and who am I? Most people have never heard of ombudsmen or know them vaguely as some sort of government civil service or other sort of official who has some vaguely defined powers. And I'll tell you first about me and then about what the ICANN Ombudsman does. It's an office that's been around not quite as long as ICANN. It's been around since 2004. I was appointed last year. And I have a 1/10 adjunct who supports me when I'm on holiday or unavailable, Herb Way. And I mention him specifically because he's going to be here at the meeting a little bit later today and for a few more days. Thank you. Now, I need to explain to you what an ombudsman is. An ombudsman is a protector of the people. He's an investigator, and what's important is that he is impartial and neutral and confidential. And you'll see as I develop through the slides why you need to have those qualities, and it's important to remember at all time, probably of those, the three last features, impartiality, neutrality, and confidentiality are most important. But it's all summed up in the concept of being a protector of the people. And how do I do that? I investigate complaints. If someone says something is happening within the ICANN community which is unfair, then you can come to me. I'm a reviewer of facts. What that means is, someone says, this thing has happened to me. And I will look at that and say, go through the facts, listen to both sides, and try and reach some sort of solution. And I do that because I'm what's called an alternative dispute resolution practitioner. And what that means is I am a mediator. And a lot of the work which I do is to try and draw parties together, to restore communication, and to do that sort of restorative process that enables us to work better as a community. I want both parties to leave a process not necessarily loving each other, but certainly being able to look each other in the eye and be happy with the result. And I'm part of one of three ICANN dispute resolution systems. As well as the Ombudsman, we also have a reconsideration committee and an independent review panel, and they're more formal processes and not as often used. And to do my work, I have some values. What I do is confidential, and that's incredibly important to the people who come and see me, because they often have quite difficult issues, and whether it's issues of imbalance of power in particular, you might be scared of the other person. You might be concerned about the impact on you. You might be concerned if you complain, your company might get treated badly. When you come and see me, no one knows anything about the complaint except me and the complainant. When I look at the problem, I'm impartial. I'm not an advocate. And that's important to distinguish me from a lawyer. If you go and see a lawyer, you expect the lawyer to go out there fighting for you and reach a result, and you'll be unhappy if the lawyer doesn't approach the problem that way. But that's not what an ombudsman does. I'm impartial. I don't take sides. I look at the issue. Is this unfair? Has there been some poor behaviour? Has someone not been respected appropriately? Is there a diversity issue which needs to be looked at? And to enable me to do my job, I'm independent, and I'll explain in a slide shortly how that independence is secured within the ICANN community. Professionalism, I go off and go to ombudsman training courses to make sure that I'm doing the job according to best international practices. But there are other features. You have to have respect for diversity. And as ICANN is developing into a truly multinational organisation, we have to recognise that there are many, many people with all sorts of different backgrounds and ideas, and we need to learn to respect those and ensure that everybody is communicating correctly and understanding each other. And to do that, one of the core tenets is to have excellence in what we do. There's some boring legal stuff behind this, of course. There's a bylaw as part of the ICANN bylaws which says what my powers are. My jurisdiction is on actions, decisions or inactions by ICANN staff, board or supporting structures, which is a fairly bland statement, but in fact encompasses the whole of the ICANN community. And you'd be surprised how wide that is. When you take it out, you'll recall Rob Hogarth's diagram, which ultimately went out to all internet users. And conceivably, that's as far as my jurisdiction may go as well. And I have some other functions to provide a place for consumer issues as well within ICANN. And that's often because people don't know where to go to complain. And while I might not be able to help, I can certainly tell you where to go. And the other function of an ombudsman within a multi-stakeholder organisation is as a symbol of good governance. We've got this amazing and complex structure and community, and we say to the supporters and the community, and by the way, not only have we got this structure, but we've got someone seated within it who makes sure that you're treated fairly, a symbol of good governance. It's most important. You've seen this diagram too many times, I think, this morning, but the reason I've got it as a slide is because you can see where the ombudsman fits in at the top. It's on my top left, but because I'm challenged in left-right direction, you might not be able to... It's on my right. The ombudsman reports directly to the board of directors. I'm not within the staff structure. I'm not within the community. The board can only remove me if I behave extremely badly, and then only by a vote of 75%. And there's a reason for that, because the ombudsman occasionally has to take on some difficult choices, and if required, I will criticise the board for something they've done and say, hey, this is not done fairly. If I were within the staff structure, I might be concerned about the effect of such a complaint on my future within the company. But because I am independent, that enables me to have that freedom to look at anything without any fear of any reprisal on me. And that's also very important. I want to give you an example of complaints, because so far I've just been talking about theory and law and structure, but I've given quite a few examples there, and I just want to go through them. And the first one, I was at a meeting and comments were made which were disrespectful and sexist, and that could be almost any form of disrespect. That might sound trivial, but to an organisation that's dependent on volunteers, we must respect each other and we must respect the work which each of us does as a volunteer. And the last thing we need is to have something happening which is inappropriate. And so in those circumstances, I can investigate, perhaps draw the parties together, suggest that there's a better way of doing these things, secure an apology perhaps. There's many things which can be done. Another example, joining one of the supporting organisations. Sometimes they might not want you in their club, and occasionally I get asked to investigate how to resolve that problem. And again, I would start off by trying to establish communication between the parties, get them talking, and you often find that sometimes they've been talking completely at cross purposes. And once you start to draw them together, you find that they're not, in fact, talking about different things at all. So that's another example where I can help where there has been unfairness. You might want to say that a policy which has been adopted is unfair to a group or to your country or to your gender or something like this. Again, I can be asked to investigate that sort of issue. Delay in refunding money, well, that's one that's happened a little bit. But again, there, that's the sort of issue I can look at. Has someone at ICANN not been performing quite as well as they might? That's actually a pretty rare situation. The other thing that I can do is what's called own motion investigations. And that is, if I decide myself that there is something which needs to be looked at, I can go to the board and say, there is a problem which I need to investigate. And they would normally agree, and I would conduct my own investigation without necessarily having a complainant. And that's to give me that additional power to look at any systemic problems which might emerge. Some things I can't do. I can't look at internal administrative matters. If someone is complaining that they haven't had their laptop complaint recently enough, replaced recently, I can't look at that sort of issue. I can't look at personnel issues. If someone feels that they've been treated badly within the ICANN staff, I'm not allowed to look at that. I can't look at issues relating to membership on the board or look at vendor and supplier relationships. And the last one, of course, because that's a legal matter anyway. So how does it work? A complaint comes in. I decide if I've got jurisdiction to deal with it. Sometimes no, and I'll advise the parties and say, I'm sorry, I don't have the power to deal with this, but here's where you could go. Maybe you should go and see your lawyer. Maybe you should refer this to contractual compliance. But if I do have jurisdiction, I open a file and I start an investigation. And the first step, of course, is to say, does this complaint have any foundation, and if it does, I'll explore mediation, other forms of dispute resolution. Hopefully, I'll get down to the problem resolved with parties box, which is my aim. But sometimes you can't, and then I'll write a report. And those reports are lodged with the board and published on my website, usually on my blog. So that's the way in which it works. I've got some links to show how it actually has worked. My homepage, the page to lodge a complaint, and my blog, where I write about various issues in relation to ombudsman, where I will write my reports and generally other articles. So just to sum up, I've told you a little bit about the theory and practice of being an ombudsman. I should also explain why you need to know me, and that is I like to think I'm very approachable. I have an office at every ICANN meeting. It's in Dockside 4, which is on the lower level. So if any of you want to call in and visit me, just even to say hello, you're most welcome. But at every ICANN meeting, I'm available for someone if they just want to make a complaint and don't want to lodge it through the case management system, and I'm happy to see you. But it's important, as I said before, that you realise that the Ombudsman is a symbol of good governance for ICANN, and so I may not look particularly decorative, but in fact there is a certain decorative function, but an important function for an Ombudsman, to show the world that while we have this complex structure, we also have mechanisms in it to make sure that it's run fairly. And to some extent, therefore, my job is partly to act as the conscience of ICANN. Those are my contact details and a squashed-looking photo of me. In fact, that shows me at the Los Angeles address. In fact, I work out of an office in Wellington, in New Zealand. And if you're ever down that way, you're welcome to come in and see me in that office as well, although I don't expect to see too many of you visit in person. But thank you for listening to me, and I say kia ora, which is Maori for thank you and goodbye, and open for any questions.
We have one question coming up. Great.
Chris, can you tell us how many own motion investigations have you actually instigated, and what roughly is the result outcome of them?
That's a good question, and I've been the Ombudsman for just a little over 1 year, and so far I haven't started any. I have on several occasions been on the verge of doing so, and the problems have resolved themselves. But it's a power that I need to have in the back of my mind if I see something systemic going on. Not often used, though.
Second question. How many cases are resolved without reference to the board, and how many have you had to write a report to the board about?
Virtually all are resolved without having to write a report to the board. I would have written in my year of operation, about 4 reports. In fact, as it happens, in none of those reports have I upheld the complaint. I'm sure that's just a statistical blip rather than necessarily meaning that people are complaining unnecessarily. It's just that those complaints didn't raise any issues which the board needed to act on.
Yes, if you have a question, please, can you go to the mic and ask the question over the mic? So both the camera will see you and we will hear you. If you can walk to the mic. And just a point of reference now, when you go to the mic, if you can identify yourselves, then your names will also appear correctly on the transcripts because these things are all minuted. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Victor Ndona. I mean, I can follow. So thank you to the Ombudsman for the presentation. My question is simple. I just want to understand well. Who pay for the ombudsman work? Because it's difficult to see. If I can pay the ombudsman, it can be a conflict that the ombudsman cannot criticize what really happened.
That's a very good question. I have an independent contract with the board. The accounts of my office are, in fact, open. And are on the website. I have an annual budget, and the process is that I calculate what my operational requirements are, which includes my contracted income, salary, and my other expenses, and that is presented to the board, who approve it. But the draft budget and the final budget are posted on the website for people to comment. In terms of my contract, I have a contract with the board which sets out my salary and the terms and conditions of my appointment. And that is, again, like the other issues of conduct, decided on by at least a three-quarters majority on the board. In fact, there's only one salary application going in, so I would hope it gets passed unanimously.
My name is Andreas Lamini. I've got two questions. One is, how much does it cost to lay a complaint with you? And then the second one is, how are you different from the dispute resolution service providers? Thank you.
It costs nothing. I should have said so, I think, in my introduction. It's a very valuable point. It's an entirely free service provided by ICANN, so that even if it's a large-scale investigation, it doesn't cost the complainant anything. And the second issue was in terms of dispute resolution providers. I am a trained arbitrator and mediator, and it says so on my website, but I have a fellowship in the New Zealand Arbitrators and Mediators Institute, and I have a master's degree in dispute resolution from Massey University. And if I need to tap into other dispute resolution providers, I have contacts both within the New Zealand dispute resolution circles, and I am a member also of the International Ombudsman Association, which is based in the United States, and the International Ombudsman Institute, which is based in Vienna, both of which are international institutions and can provide dispute resolution backup for me if I need it. Does that answer the question?
Sorry. The question is, where does the difference come in terms of bringing disputes from internet users or domain name dispute resolutions? Can I bring a problem to you instead of a dispute resolution service provider? That is in terms of domain name registrations.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't properly understand your question. And again, that's a valuable question because, in fact, if it is an issue between a customer and a registrar, I don't, in fact, have jurisdiction to deal with that because that is not a complaint between ICANN and a supporting body or within a supporting body. That is a commercial and contractual relationship. people are sometimes treated unfairly by their registrars, and sometimes the customers treat their registrars unfairly as well. But I don't have the jurisdiction under my bylaw or framework to intervene in those disputes. Occasionally, however, I will attempt to resolve the disputes by mediation processes, and the reason I do that is because that's a voluntary process, and if the parties are both willing for me to intervene in that way and help resolve the issue, then that fixes it for them. But unless they agree for me to look at it, I can't do so on my own.
Just wanted to make sure that it was answered. Joan Kerr, Joan Kerr, Foundation for Building Sustainable Communities. In that you haven't had any issues or disputes to resolve, in terms of the office, do you have access to previous issues? And were there any issues where a policy came out of that?
Yes, I operate a case management system which records everything that the office has done. And there are annual reports published each year which discuss what has been done and the areas where some changes need to be made. And from time to time, policies have been changed by the board as a result of those investigations. Not by me, but by my predecessor, Frank Fowley. So I do have the ability to influence the board if necessary.
Oh, that's good. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Please.
Excusez-moi, je vais parler en français.
Excuse me, I'm going to speak in French. I'm going to ask to translate. It'll be a very short talk, but I think it'll be useful. We talk about the role of the mediator, the ombudsman. You'll have to repeat it because he needs to put his. Oh.
Apologize, my French is very inadequate.
And can you repeat it in English after hearing it?
Merci.
Thank you. My name is Cherbet. I am a fellowship. I am from Mauritania. I want to clarify your role. I would like to clarify your role. First, yes, the mediator, the ombudsman, is paid by ICANN. But it does not stop the fact that he is independent. It is very important that to know that once you're nominated, you cannot be changed. Unless you have a very grave, you do something really wrong, and it has to be by 3/4 majority of the votes from the board. You are. Judges, for example, is the same in countries. They're supposed to be independent. So the independence of the mediator is not linked to the fact that he is paid by ICANN. Second of all, the fact that there has not been any conflict, that there's doesn't mean that you're... it doesn't mean that... It would be good, for example, that people didn't have any problem. For example, it wouldn't be possible that people were not sick, but it would mean that we wouldn't have any hospital because people are not sick. So the position of the mediator is more like in prevention to conflict. Also, if there is a conflict and people want some arbitrary position, it would be very expensive to bring somebody from the outside. Thank you.
Valuable observations. I think you're emphasising the value of the Ombudsman as a symbol of good governance. And as you say, even if I'm not getting much work, then the fact that I'm here assures people that there are methods of solving problems. regrettably, I am getting a lot of work, but that's the way it is. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chris. This was very valuable. Now, we end the morning part of this group of presentations. We will have a break now until 2. So at 2 p.m. in the same room here, we will continue with engagement tools, where we're going to explain you in what kind of online tools you can use for engagement, even between meetings, because it continues. It's not only 3 times we see each other and then forget about each other between meetings. It continues, the engagement. We will talk about registries and registrars, the new GTLDs and the new trends that are coming in, and then the contractual compliance. So please be back, hopefully, here after having some lunch and coffee. And we will resume here at 2 p.m. Thank you.